Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya. Naram Chaiva Narottamam. Devim Saraswatim Vyasam. Totojayam Udirayet. Nasta Prayeshu Abhadreshu. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya. Bhagavati Uttama Shloke. Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki. I'm so sorry. You never know. Unexpected things are always happening. Hare Rama. Okay. Before reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our very means of conquest, one should first offer respectful obeisances unto Narayan, the personality of Godhead, unto Naranaran Rishi, the supermost human being, unto Mother Saraswati, the goddess of learning, and unto Srila Vyasadeva, the author. By regular attendance in classes of Srimad Bhagavatam, and by rendering service unto the pure devotee, all that is troublesome to the heart is almost completely destroyed, and loving service unto the personality of Godhead, who is praised with transcendental songs, is established as an irrevocable fact. So we're reading a group of verses this morning from the first canto, first chapter. We're going to read through verse 9 all the way through 23. And in this group of verses, there's questions. There's 6 questions by the sages that they're asking. So this series of questions is the whole basis for the dialogue of Srimad Bhagavatam. Try to remember that we're hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a conversation. It's a conversation by Sukadeva Goswami to Maharaj Parikit. But we are not hearing that conversation directly. We're hearing... So when Sukadeva Goswami was speaking to Maharaj Parikit, in the audience was many sages, many personalities were there. Among them was Suta Goswami. So Sukadeva Goswami speaks to Maharaj Parikit. Suta Goswami, he hears it, and later on, he recites it. Suta Goswami is reciting Srimad Bhagavatam as he heard it from Sukadeva Goswami. He's reciting it in the Naimisharanya forest. That's the conversation we're hearing. It's a detail, but it helps you kind of shift through the different dialogues that you hear, because all of a sudden Suta Goswami will speak, this one will speak, and you wonder, where did they come from? So Suta Goswami heard Sukadeva Goswami speak the Bhagavatam. He is now speaking it to a group of sages in the Naimisharanya forest. In the Naimisharanya forest, there's thousands of sages. One time I knew the number. One time I think it's like 15,000 sages, but you don't have to quote me on that. But there's a huge amount of personalities there that are having a sacrifice for the benefit of all humanity. So Suta Goswami, he's speaking various Puranas. Because everybody, if you ever noticed when you have a group of people, not everybody's on the same page. So not everybody was on the same level of advancement. Some were thinking that fruitive activities would lead one to perfection. Some were thinking that jnana kanda would lead one to perfection. They were all in different levels of advancement. So Suta Goswami speaks many stories, many Puranic stories, many sacred literatures, and gradually brings them to an elevated position, and then he's speaking Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay? So here, questions by the sages, these are some of the sages at that gathering in Naimisharanya asking Sutta Goswami about Srimad Bhagavatam. You know, because they want to know what the highest benefit for humanity is. Okay? Questions on that? Is that clear to you? Okay, who wants to repeat it? In general. Clayton. Oh, God. Okay, which one? That's Clayton right there, right? Green? Okay, sorry. Okay, Michael. Very good. Good. Very good. Yeah, there's a lot of them. Yeah, right. Very good. Anyone want to add anything? So he gradually brings them to the highest level. But what we hear is Srimad Bhagavatam. We're hearing Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is described as Amala Puranam, the spotless Purana. It's the highest one. Srimad Bhagavatam is glorified among all the Vedic literatures as the topmost spiritual essence of all. It's the essence of all the Vedic literature. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, of all the Vedas, of all your study of the Vedas, that you're supposed to know me. Srimad Bhagavatam is dedicated only to knowing Krishna. And therefore, it is the highest Purana, giving the essence of all the others and the perfection of all the others. Okay? So we have a lot of verses to read. We're not going to read all the purports because it's just a little bit too much. But we're going to read, let's go through reading the verses. Let's go around the room. We'll just
can you grab the water? Or yeah. Okay.
And you take the mic. You start there. Start, please.
Start
from
text 9.
Please, therefore, being blessed with many years, explain to us in an easily understandable way what you have ascertained to be the absolute and ultimate. Ascertained to be the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general.
Okay. So then I just thought of another piece of introductory information for you. Sutta Goswami. Remember in reading your Krishna book stories about when Lord Balaram was touring the sacred places of pilgrimage? Remember that story? Lord Balaram, he didn't take part in the Battle of Kurukshetra because he had relationships on both sides. He was very favorably inclined to Duryodhana. But his relatives were on the other. He didn't take part. So he went on pilgrimage so that he could be occupied and not be thinking of what's going on. At one point, he walks into, where does he walk in? He walks into Naimisharanya Forest. And there's all the sages there. So who was sitting there in Naimisharanya Forest when Balaram was
there?
Romaharshan Sutta. Romaharshan is the father of Sutta Goswami. Romaharshan Sutta was sitting on the Vyasasan, and normally when one's in that position, one doesn't have to offer respects to others. But as Prabhupada explains in the purport, normally the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself doesn't walk in. So therefore, he actually was at fault for not offering respects, even verbally. He didn't anything. So therefore, Lord Balaram killed him with his Kusha grass, a special. He just picked up a piece of grass and touched him, and Romaharshan was killed. Now, the sages, when that happened, they said, oh my gosh, what'd you do that for? We just blessed him with a life as long as Lord Brahma. We just blessed him with transcendental knowledge and everything and everything. And Lord Balaram said, well, if you like, I can bring him back to life. And they said, no, don't bring them back to life, but don't make our benedictions null and void either. So that was a little bewildering. For a normal person, it would be bewildering. But for Lord Balaram, he said, okay, so let's transfer the benedictions to his son, Sutta. And therefore, O you who are blessed with many years. Sutta Goswami was blessed with many years through his father's benediction. Could be. I have to admit, I don't know. Do you know that, if Sutta Goswami's present? He's not. He's done his part and gone back. But he does, and it was spoken such a long time ago.
O learned one, in this iron age of Kali, men have but short lives. They are quarrelsome, lazy, misguided, unlucky, and above all, always disturbed.
This is a very famous verse. It describes the symptoms of all of those who are born in Kali Yuga. What their characteristics are: lazy, unlucky, misguided, disturbed in mind. So someone who has those qualities, it's very difficult to fix their mind on the absolute truth. It's very difficult to even want to find out what the absolute truth is. And then when they try to find out what the absolute truth is, they get misguided. They get cheated oftentimes. So this is our special challenge in Kali Yuga.
There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them there are many prescribed duties, which can be learned only after many years of study in their various divisions. Therefore, O sage, please select the essence of all these scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, that by such instruction their hearts may be fully satisfied.
Thank you. So if we take the previous verse, was saying that in Kali Yuga people have short lives. So in a short amount of time, it's very difficult to go through all the varieties of scriptures and try to figure out which is the appropriate one to follow, which is the most beneficial. So therefore, what are they asking in this verse?
The
essence. They're asking for the essence. They want the essence. They want to know what's the essence of all the scriptures. So, please continue.
All blessings upon you, O Sutta Goswami. You know for what purpose the personality of Godhead appeared in the womb of Devaki as the son of Vasudeva.
Because Krishna's birth is a mystery. It's very mysterious. So Sutta Goswami, he knew for what purpose Krishna appeared.
O Sutta Goswami, we are eager to learn about the personality of Godhead and its incarnations. Please explain to us those teachings imparted by previous masters, acharyas, for one is uplifted both by speaking them and by hearing them.
Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously chanting the holy name of Krishna, which is feared by fear personified.
Sutta, those great sages who have completely taken shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord can at once sanctify those who come in touch with them, whereas the water of the Ganges can sanctify only after prolonged use.
Who is there desiring liberation from the vices of the age of quarrel? Who is not willing to hear the virtuous glories of the Lord?
His transcendental acts are magnificent and gracious, and great learned sages like Narada sing of them. Please, therefore, speak to us who are eager to hear about the adventures he performs in his various incarnations.
O wise Sutta, please narrate to us the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Godhead's multi-incarnations, such auspicious adventures and pastimes of the Lord, the Supreme Controller, are performed by His internal powers.
We never tire of hearing the transcendental pastimes of the personality of Godhead, who is glorified by hymns and prayers. Those who have developed a taste for transcendental relationships with him relish hearing of his pastimes at every moment.
Lord Sri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, along with Balaram, played like a human being. So masked, he performed many superhuman acts.
Knowing well that the age of Kali has already begun, we are assembled here in this holy place to hear at great length the transcendental message of Godhead, and in this way perform sacrifice.
We think that we have met your goodness by the will of Providence, just so that we may accept you as a captain of the ship for those who desire to cross the difficult ocean of Kali, which deteriorates all the good qualities of a human being.
Since Sri Krishna, the Absolute Truth, the master of all mystic powers, has departed for his own abode, please tell us to whom the religious principles have now gone for shelter.
So in that series of verses, there are six questions, and sometimes the questions are more or less in the form of a statement. And we'll go over those so that it becomes a little more clear what the sages are asking. Okay, let's go to text number 9. So here, in text number 9, here's their first question. First chapter, text 9, is the first question of the sages. They're saying, please tell us what is the most beneficial for humanity. Please tell us, please explain, what's the most beneficial activities for humanity at large? I'm going to read the purport there. In Bhagavad Gita, worship of the Acharya is recommended. The Acharyas and Goswamis are always absorbed in the thought of the well-being of the general public, especially their spiritual well-being. Spiritual well-being is automatically followed by material well-being. Oh, did you catch that? Oftentimes we think in opposite ways. Oftentimes we think, let me get my material life together, and then I'll take to Krishna consciousness. Let me get my thing down so that I have a means of economic development in my life, and then when that's all taken care of and I'm not in anxiety about that, then I'll take to spiritual life. So what do you think about that, Clayton? It's backwards. It is backwards. And that's, unfortunately, that's how we think in Kali Yuga. We're trained to think backwards. We're trained to think that I'm my body and my body should be happy, and first I'll take care of my body and my bodily needs and my family needs, then I'll take the spiritual life. Unfortunately, if you think like that, oftentimes you find there's no time left. There's no time because why? The mind, the body, the children, the family, this situation, that, they always need a little bit more. The mind's always thinking for a little, how to make it a little more comfortable, how to make a little more this. So we're always thinking, let me just get a little bit more. Even if you look at, if you study in Srila Prabhupada's life, he exhibited that just to teach us. He exhibited that. He said, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, when he first offered his obeisances, when he was 22, 23 years old to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, young man just working, just starting to work, just starting with a family, Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said, you can speak English, you should go preach in the Western countries, even before he got up from his obeisances. And Srila Prabhupada thought, he thought various things, but he thought, well, I have my family responsibilities. Let me take care of my family. Let me get a lot of money, and then I'll support the movement by my money. Now, we oftentimes fall into the same line of thinking. Let's get everything straightened out and get comfortable, and then I'll support the movement. I'll do this. I'll do that. But actually, here, a very, very important point is being stressed, and all throughout the Bhagavatam it'll be stressed. Spiritual well-being is primary importance, and material well-being will follow if you're spiritually well situated. So how can you how can we understand that? Do you have any realizations on that? How can you understand that? Because it's not that you see that every single person who's involved in spiritual life is financially well off.
Well, when your spiritual well-being is good, then you're happy. Inside, you're happy. And so that all the things are happening outside, all the material things, you're kind of less affected by them, and you're more focused on your spirituality than all your material things. And even what you have, you're thankful for when you're a spiritual person. You're thankful for whatever you have.
Exactly. Even one might have less, but one's satisfied. We're satisfied with what comes of its own accord. It's an important point. Would you like to add something to that?
I'd just like to quote our dear millionaire friend, Ambarish Prabhu. He said, people who don't have money, people who don't have money hope that money will bring them happiness. People who have money know that money doesn't bring happiness.
The school of hard knocks. Anyway, so it's an important point. Okay, so what was the first question here that the sages are asking? Wait, one person, please read your money. What is the absolute good for everyone? What is the absolute good for everyone? Now, that's pretty magnanimous, isn't it? They're not asking, just tell us what we need to hear. Because, you know, they want to know what's the absolute good for everyone. I could get a little distracted on that one, because that's actually in the Nectar Devotion on the characteristics of pure devotional service. Pure devotional service is described as auspicious. It's auspicious for everyone because it actually deals with the essential nature of the human being. So many things a person might do, someone who's very kind, someone who has empathy for the suffering people or this or that, someone who wants to help the poor, That's great, but that only helps a few. So this nation's oppressed. That'll help some people there, but it'll also help. But so many, nothing can help everyone like pure devotional service. So here the sages are asking, what's the ultimate good for all the people? That's the first question that they're asking. So if you go to text 11. Vai, Bob, you want to read this letter?
There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them there... I have read purport or translation?
Translation.
There are many varieties of scriptures, and in all of them there are many prescribed duties, which can be learned only after many years of study in their various divisions. Therefore, O sage, please... select the essence of all these scriptures and explain it for the good of all living beings, that by such instruction their heart may be fully satisfied.
Okay, so now you need to boil it down and give us what that question is or what that statement is that they're asking here in that text 11.
Sages are asking that there are so many scriptures that talk about so many things. What is the essence of all these scriptures? What is the ultimate goal to which all these scriptures lead to?
When someone's searching for the essence of something, it's condensed. You're condensing so much information into a small bit of information. So give us what the essence is. And this essence pleases the intelligence. It pleases the intelligence in the heart of all living beings. Okay, that's the second question that's listed there. So right in text 12. Now sometimes these questions will seem similar, but they have different flavors in them. Okay?
Living beings who are entangled in the complicated meshes of birth and death can be freed immediately by even unconsciously... No, I'm on 14. Oops. All blessings upon you, O Sutta Goswami. You know for what purpose the personality of Godhead appeared in the womb of Devaki as the son of Vasudev. Bhagavan means the Almighty God who is the controller of all opulence, power, fame, beauty, knowledge, and renunciation. He is the protector of his pure devotees. Although God is equally disposed to everyone, he is especially inclined to his devotees. Sat means the absolute truth, and persons who are servitors of the absolute truth are called sattvatas, and the personality of Godhead who protects such pure devotees is known as the protector of the sattvatas. Bhadrang te, or blessings upon you, indicates the sage's anxiety to know the absolute truth from the speaker. Lord Shri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, appeared to Devaki, the wife of Vasudeva. Vasudeva is the symbol of the transcendental position wherein the appearance of the Supreme Lord takes place.
So Vishnu, can you summarize? Kishore?
They're asking why Krishna took birth.
Mm-hmm. As we got past. So why did Krishna take birth? Why is it important to know why Krishna took birth? Think in terms of Bhagavad Gita. What does it say in Bhagavad Gita about Krishna's birth and appearance?
When there's a rise of irreligion and a loss of principles, then he comes to defeat the demons and to reestablish those religious principles.
Okay, that's true. But what does it say particularly about somebody who knows about Krishna's birth and appearance? What's the result of knowing about Krishna's birth and appearance? Exactly. Thank you. Can you remind me what your name is?
James.
James? Thanks. Sorry. It's a learning curve. I have to remember. Okay, right. So by learning, by knowing Krishna's, why Krishna appeared, Bhagavad Gita explains one doesn't have to take birth in this material world again. It's very important to understand the nature of Krishna's birth and activity. So the sages are asking that in text 12. Why did Krishna take birth? So, and then if you, well, you didn't get to Queen Kunti's prayers yet, but she'll give different reasons and there are so many reasons, and Sutta Goswami will give us the essence of why Krishna took birth and some of his glorious activities. So let's go up to 17, and we skip some of the devotees down here. Can you read 17, please?
His transcendental acts are magnificent and gracious, and great learned sages like Narada sing of them. Please, therefore, speak to us who are eager to hear about his adventures he performs in his various incarnations.
And can you give us the essence in your own word of what that verse is saying to summarize that question or that they're asking, that inquiry?
No.
It's similar to the other one. But what's the difference now?
The things that he does are magnificent and they're eager to hear from sages like Narada.
So what they're asking in this verse is slightly, they asked previously about his birth, now they're asking about his activities. Please tell us about his activities. His birth and activities. Similar, but a little even more profound.
What about his activities?
That you have to read the rest of the book.
Yeah, I know.
Okay?
I have the book.
What are some of the activities that he performs when he comes as Krishna or even in his different incarnations? So now, one of the next questions that they ask is, According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it's in text 18. Okay? And I also don't know what your name is. What's your name? Kim again? Nick? Okay. Can you read text 18?
Yeah. O wise Sutta, please narrate to us the transcendental pastimes of the Supreme Godhead's multi-incarnations. Such auspicious adventures and pastimes of the Lord, the Supreme Controller, are performed by His internal powers.
Pastimes and about who was performing in the pastimes, but now they want to know about his incarnations and why he came. And
got it. Perfect. Good. So again, the questions are similar, but they have different shades to them. So first question about Krishna was, please tell us about Krishna's birth. Then the next one was, please tell us about his activities. And now, please tell us about his activities and his multi-incarnations. So at all aspects, they don't mind hearing anything as long as it's related to Krishna. They don't mind hearing about Nisringadeva or Vamana or this one or that one because it's Krishna's incarnations. Okay. So also, in text 20, some people say that the next one of the sages asked this question, but you can encompass this question in text 20 in the previous question, so I'm just going to read it. Lord Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, along with Balaram, played like a human being, and so masked, he performed many superhuman acts. What does that mean, so masked? What does that mean? Why is that there? Amrita Kaili?
The ordinary person would think that he was an ordinary person.
Exactly. So he had the mask on, like, I'm just normal here. I'm just a person. I'm just, you know, I can do this. I'm going to cry if I don't get fed in time, and I'm going to do this. But every now and then he would, like, dip over the meal or, you know, show his mother the universe is in his mouth.
Now that you say that, I guess it's not just ordinary people that would think he's ordinary, even the greatest devotees that think he's ordinary too, by Yoga Maya.
Oh, okay, by Yoga Maya. All right. So Mother Yasoda wasn't dissuaded that this is my son, not even for a second. Even though when he opened his mouth, she saw the whole universe inside his mouth. Yeah. So that's a different type of illusion, Yoga Maya, the internal potency of the Lord. So. I was going to say something about Krishna's activities. Fell out. Do you want to add something? Okay, so we're up to... and so what have you got so far for your six questions? What's the first question? Ambika, do you have it down? Do you know what the first question was?
What's the ultimate good for everybody?
Okay, good. The ultimate good for everybody. What was the second question that the sages asked? Vija?
What is the essence of all the scriptures?
Okay, good. Third one? Clayton, you got the third one there?
The reason for Krishna's birth.
Okay, what's the reason? Please explain to us.
I know we just went over it. Is it what I said earlier?
Mm-hmm.
Is it what I had said earlier? About reestablishing religious principles, and also, well, he does it ultimately. He does it ultimately for his own pleasure.
Ultimately, he does it for the devotee's pleasure.
Right, but he derives pleasure from the devotee's pleasure. So.
So there's many reasons that Krishna took
birth.
Yeah.
And it's also to save whoever might be able to understand the reason for his birth.
And it's also to attract all of those conditioned souls who don't really even realize that he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He also takes birth for them, to attract them back home, back to Godhead. So it's not that there's just one answer. There's many answers. And as as it's kind of obvious, since there are 18,000 verses to the Srimad Bhagavatam, that there's many ways to look at that. So that was the third. What was the fourth question, James? Do you remember? Oh, good.
It's about Krishna's activities.
Right.
His activities.
Sometimes we forget them. Yeah, about his activities. His birth, his activities, and then there was one more thing related to Krishna and his activities.
His incarnations?
His incarnations, because there's so many of them and so many different amazing pastimes of the incarnations. So what number does that get us up to? Is that four? Five? Okay, thanks. It's true, because there's different people, when they look at these questions, they pull them out of different verses. So that's why I actually gave you seven reasons for the six questions. You know, just to make sure that you're counting properly. Okay, so the last question that they're going to ask is in the last verse. Andrea G.,
since Sri Krishna, the Absolute Truth, the Master of all mystic powers, has departed for his own abode, please tell us to whom the religious principles have now gone for shelter.
So who's the shelter of Dharma? Krishna's the shelter of Dharma, and now that he's departed for his own abode, because if you remember now, this is Sutta Goswami speaking in the Naimasharanya forest. So this is after the Battle of Kurukshetra. This is after the demise of the Yadu dynasty, you know, by the fratricidal war. Krishna just sat down under a small banyan tree and decided to leave. So this is after Krishna left. So they're saying, so where's the shelter of religious principles now? I didn't even get a chance to really ask it, and you're already telling me. But you're right. Srimad Bhagavatam. And what is... you guys probably know. There's different verses praising Srimad Bhagavatam. Can you give us some of the praises of the Bhagavatam that you remember that specifically relate to how the Bhagavatam will help people in general?
Completely rejecting all religious activities which are materially motivated, this Bhagavad Purana propounds the highest truth, which is understandable by those devotees who are fully pure in heart. The highest truth is reality distinguished from illusion for the welfare of all. Such truth uproots the threefold miseries. This beautiful Bhagavatam, compiled by the great sage Vyas in his maturity, is sufficient in itself for God realization. What is the need of any other scripture? As soon as one attentively and submissively hears the message of the Bhagavatam, by this culture of knowledge, the Supreme Lord is established within his heart.
Okay. So what were some of the things there? He was quoting from verse 2. First chapter, text number 2. But there are many other verses glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you.
Krishna Swadhamu Pagati, Dharma Gyanad Bisa, Kalau Nasta Drisa Isha, Puranarkwa Dinoditaha. That people who have lost their vision due to the darkness of this age of Kali Yuga will get the vision back through the Srimad Bhagavatam.
Srimad Bhagavatam gives the light. It lights up the consciousness of those who are engrossed in ignorant activities in Kali Yuga. Srimad Bhagavatam will light up their consciousness and enlighten their heart. So, as in verse 2, it said Srimad Bhagavatam is the only scripture that's necessary in this age. I don't know, but Prabhu might know. Second chapter? Yeah. So Srimad Bhagavatam is the only scripture that one needs. So we were hearing about the different characteristics of Kali Yuga. People have short lives. They're unlucky. They're disturbed. They're never peaceful. They can barely sit down for, you know, half an hour at a time without wiggling all over the place and without thinking of all the things that they have to do and without their cell phone ringing, without so many things happening, you know. It's very difficult. You're having a special delivery at the door there. Yeah, thanks. So in this age, Srimad Bhagavatam will actually be able to deliver the essence of religious principles to everyone, even though there's so much difficulty. Like, for example, the sages, the... Thank you. You can tell the number? 1343. It's the 43rd verse of the third chapter. Okay. It's a nice verse to memorize for those of you who are inclined to memorization. So Srimad Bhagavatam will give us the essence of all, just like, okay, I was saying about the sages. The sages that were listening to Sudha Goswami, they had performed austerities, they had performed different yoga practices, controlling the breathing, the sitting posture, so many things, just to fix their mind on Brahman. Such a long process, a long procedure, very difficult, and they're not even getting the essence. They're only getting a glimpse. Like in Lord Brahma describes that they only see the light of the toes. Look. Okay? Now, like, if you just only saw that, it's not like you're seeing very much, right? It's not like you're understanding the person. It's not like that you're understanding the activities. Just look, the light of the toes. You know? So that's what they get. They get something. They're making progress. Very difficult to make progress. Very long procedure. Very few people can take it up. And in this age, very few people are inclined to anything like that, so austere. What do they get? But Srimad Bhagavatam, by describing the name, the quality, the pastimes, the avatars, and oh, so many things of Krishna, gives one the essence of all religious scriptures and brings one to the highest level of understanding. Now, in one of our verses, we were hearing that Srimad Bhagavatam will... it was compiled by Vyasadeva. And then it gave a little description about Vyasadeva's state of realization at the time. Does that stick out in your mind? What was Vyasadeva compiled Srimad Bhagavatam in the state of his maturity, in his mature level of realization. So, as we go through this first canto, you'll see that... Vyasadeva, he had compiled Mahabharata. He had compiled all the Puranas. He had compiled the Rig Veda. So he had compiled all the Vedic literatures. And up until that point, he was still feeling a little dissatisfied. And he was like examining himself. Why I did all this? I have this great slide that the Mayapur Institute did. So you can get a pictorial view of how vast the Vedic literature is. But I didn't bring it, so. But it's a huge compilation of Vedic literatures, just, you know, way beyond what we're familiar, the names that we're familiar with. He had compiled all of those, and still he was feeling a little dissatisfied because he hadn't only glorified Krishna. He had done so many things, explained so many things, and so many histories, and so many thises, and so many moral principles, and so many yogic principles, and so many things. But he hadn't compiled literature that only glorified Krishna. And so when he consulted with his spiritual master, who was his spiritual master? Narada Muni. And Narada said, this is why, because you need to glorify the Lord. Have you ever made an experiment? I'm going to recommend an experiment to you, in case you haven't done it, which I doubt you've done it. Some days have you noticed like everything's good and happy and great and you're energetic and enlivened and things go a little smooth. And some days just aren't the same like that, you know. You're a little less enthusiastic, particularly about your devotional activities. It's a little more difficult to chant your rounds. The mind's all over the place. And on days like that, take the experiment and just take a few minutes and tell somebody a story about Krishna. Glorify Krishna. Just tell somebody something about Krishna and see how it doesn't bring you up. Just that few minutes. You read something, if you can remember the details of what you read, tell somebody what you read about Krishna. And I can guarantee you, just those few sentences, just those that little glorification of Krishna will change your mood. So you should test that out this week, okay? That's your homework for this week. Next Tuesday I'm going to ask you if you did that, okay? Just take the opportunity to glorify Krishna. Tell somebody, even they know the story of Govardhan Hill backwards and forwards, tell them the story of Govardhan Hill. Say it out loud. Tell them something that you know about Krishna and see how enlivening that is and see how much nicer it is to have a conversation on that level than on our other levels that some of our conversations are on, you know? So that glorification of Krishna is very, very potent. So Vyasa, Narada advises Vyasa, and Vyasadeva's already come to that conclusion himself also, that he needs to just glorify Krishna. Then he compiles Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's what that's referring to, that this Bhagavatam was compiled by Vyasadeva in his mature state of realization. After he compiled all those other things, which were very valuable and very this and very that, but then he glorifies Krishna in the Bhagavatam. It's the essence. So Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a chapter entitled Srimad Bhagavatam is the answer. Srimad Bhagavatam is the answer. It has all the answers to all, everything, and delivers that highest knowledge and that perfection and that bliss that we're all looking for. Srila Sanatan Goswami, he has beautiful prayers glorifying Srimad Bhagavatam. And he's saying that, oh, Srimad Bhagavatam, you're my only friend. You're my companion. You're my bliss. You're my wealth. You're my everything. Please, and then he says, please don't ever leave me. Please become manifest in my heart and my throat. Let me speak. And accompanied by love of Godhead. Beautiful, beautiful prayers in the Krishna Lila Stava by Sanatana Goswami. Okay, so that's the essence of today's discourse. You've got some questions or comments or clarifications?
There was one more question, who wants to get liberated and who does not want to get liberated.
You can go through those series of verses and perhaps you can pick out a few different questions, but the essence of the questions are covered under those six questions. So who wants to get liberated, who doesn't want to get liberated, it's included in other, you know, questions. Let's see. Now, Kalakanta Prabhu? Rhetorical question. It's rhetorical.
Which verse is that, Vaishnava, you're looking at? Yeah, who wouldn't want to hear about? Yeah, that's not really an inquiry. That's more like a declaration. Who wouldn't want to hear about Krishna consciousness?
Who wouldn't want to hear about it? Because by hearing about him, one is benefited in so many ways. So who wouldn't want to hear about it? Actually, that question, even though it is rhetorical, it is answered later on in the Bhagavatam. Because it's explained that who wouldn't want to hear the Bhagavatam? Only an animal killer. Or someone who's killing their own self. Anyway. Other questions or comments? Amrita?
So, I was confused about text 20. Lord Shri Krishna, the personality of Godhead, along with Balaram, played like a human being, and so masked, he performed many superhuman acts. Is that included in the question about what are the various activities that Krishna performs?
Yes.
So 1:117 and 1:120 then are in the same. That
yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Other points? Okay. So what's your homework?
Glorify Krishna.
Okay. Thank you. Glory to Srila Prabhupada and Srimad Bhagavatam.